There is nothing to fear. There is nothing to fear. So just take a breath. Kind of try to let go of wherever it is you're coming from, wherever it is you're going. And we're going to shift into our other mind. There's nothing to fear. There's nothing to fear. You might want to silently tell yourself that. There's nothing to fear. Telling you that there's nothing to fear simply states a fact. Now, that there's nothing to fear is not a fact to those who believe in illusions. It doesn't seem true that there's nothing to fear. But the illusions are not facts. So in truth, in reality, there is nothing to fear. And it's very easy to recognize that there's nothing to fear. But it's difficult. It's difficult to recognize that there's nothing to fear if you want your fears to be true. So this is going to be a very simple meditation. You just say to yourself silently, there is nothing to fear. As often as possible today, tell yourself there's nothing to be afraid of. There's nothing to fear. You can say it with your eyes open. You can say it with your eyes closed during the day. But say it slowly. The key is to tell yourself the truth slowly. There is nothing to fear. It is very important to tell yourself there is nothing to fear. Should anything disturb your peace of mind, tell yourself immediately if something is disturbing you. Tell yourself immediately if something is disturbing you. Tell yourself there is nothing to fear. There is nothing to fear. If you do feel the presence of fear, if you do feel the presence of conflict, or worry, or concern, or anger, if you do feel any kind of anxiety or depression, it's a sure sign that you are trusting in your own strength, separate from God. The awareness that there's nothing to fear, if you feel like deep in your heart, there's nothing to fear, then that shows that somewhere in your mind, you have remembered God. It means if there's a part of you that's aware that there's nothing to fear, then there's a part of you that has let God's strength take the place of your weakness. The instant you're willing to let God's strength, the strength of your Creator, take the place of your weakness, you're just depending on yourself alone. When you make that connection with your source for real, there is indeed nothing to fear. There is 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 nothing there's nothing to fear. Okay. We were talking about the development of trust on page 10 in the manual for teachers. Sure. Welcome. But today I want to talk about how is healing accomplished, and that's going to be on page 17. I want to talk on Wednesday. I want to jump around to some interesting sections. And remember, you don't have to believe the ideas, accept the ideas, or welcome the ideas. Some of the ideas you might find hard to believe. Some of the ideas you might find startling. But that's all right. And I'm just going to cover the first half of paragraph 1, and then I'm going to jump down to the shift of perception. In the one that says, how is healing accomplished? And when we're talking about healing, we're talking about healing. Okay, rather clear? It's like, what does that mean? Healing. It means that the fear has been undone. The conflict has been undone. The situation is resolved. You know. So the first sentence says, healing involves an understanding of what the illusion of sickness is for. Healing is impossible without an understanding of what the problem or the sickness is for. So you won't get the answer or the healing until you know what it's for. What are you going through this for? So then it says the perceived purpose of sickness. It says, healing is accomplished the instant the sufferer no longer sees any value in pain. That should be like bronzed. The healing is accomplished the instant the sufferer sees no value in pain. So that would say to me that if I'm in a painful situation or perception, then the reason why that painful situation or perception hasn't changed is that there's some part of me, even if I don't recognize it, that must what? Must see value. So that would say that there's a payoff in any perception of pain. That the reason why it doesn't lead, the perception, I keep saying perception because the course is about talking about healing perception, the way that we see things. And then it says that once you heal your perception, then you have a resolution to the situation. So if I've been seeing my mother the same way for the last 20 years, and it looks like no matter what I do, I can't change my perception of my boss, my friend, my cousin, my lover, my child, and I'm suffering, there is some payoff. Don't even worry about knowing what the payoff is. The healing comes from recognizing there is some payoff. The ego part of the mind will go immediately to, well, what is the payoff? I need to just get clear that it's the payoff that's causing the problem. I need to stop right there and just be with that for a minute. There's a payoff. Now, he says, who would choose suffering unless he thought it brought him something and something of value to him? Suffering must be, the person must think that it's a small price to pay for something of greater worth. For sickness or suffering is an election, it's a decision, it's the choice for weakness and the mistaken conviction that it is strength. So when a person sees weakness somehow as the way to go, then real strength is seen as threat and health is seen as danger. If I'm a person who has used sickness to, like, let's say I'm a mother and I've been using sickness to get attention from my children, then health wouldn't be what I wanted, because they don't come around when I'm feeling good, but they come around when I'm feeling bad. So therefore, I experienced that with my own mother. She, my mother was an incredible person, but she taught me a lot of lessons. And one thing that she did that I didn't do with my children is she made her children her life, and she didn't create one of her own. So therefore, we were everything. So if we didn't come around and if we didn't give her attention, then she would go into deep depression because she wanted our attention all the time, which made it difficult for us to create our own experience, because we couldn't do anything without thinking about her, even if we wanted to go somewhere else and do something. The point that I'm making is that, and so she would sometimes get very, she would get sick, and it would be the happiest I would see her, in a way, because it would, you could see her happiness about having all her kids standing around her, trying to see how she was doing. It was, even though she was in the pain of being sick, and when we weren't, and when she was feeling good, then of course we would want to do what we need to do in our life. So that's what the Course is saying. If there's a situation in your life that you're suffering in, and for some reason it looks like you can't get past that suffering, then there's some kind of a payoff that you're receiving from that. One of the things that comes to mind for me is that if I'm a person that's afraid of love, but I really want to believe I want love, then I would attract people to me that I would be afraid to love, so that I could use the excuse that I really would love them, but that they don't deserve it and they don't treat me right. But what that really does is it keeps me from having to be loving, me from trusting, me from being open, me from being vulnerable. Because see, there's no reason for me to open up and really even try to love, because you don't really treat me right and you don't really deserve. So really, it's the payoff is I never get challenged to really be loving. I never be challenged to see if I can really be intimate and have intimacy. Oh, I want the intimacy, but I just never find the right person. They just never kind of show up. Well, the truth is, you're scared to death of intimacy. So you don't really need a loving person, because a loving person would mean you have to be loving and open and vulnerable yourself. So you know, a person may not consciously realize they're running that game on themselves. But if you are full of fear, or maybe you've been abused, or maybe you've been hurt, or maybe people you care about have been disappointing to you, then there's a part of you that's afraid of love. So it's easier to not have to love if there's simply no one that seems like they're worthy of your love. And I see that a lot with people, and I'm sure you do too. You know, so if I'm afraid, if I have a lot of wealth, I might lose my friggin' mind and go crazy and do all kind of stuff I wouldn't ordinarily do, because now I can bankroll my fantasies. Then I'll keep myself broke for my own protection. You see what I mean? You know, if I feel more comfortable not having a lot of responsibility, and I feel more comfortable not being out front, then doggone right, I don't want to get that promotion, even while I complain, because I really don't want the responsibility that would come with that. But then, if I don't ever get it, then I don't ever have to step up. But I can say I really would if they give me the chance. So in other words, there's a payoff in being in that situation. And what I find the payoff to be with most people is that they really are afraid to be the person they have to be to move into that next arena. So it's just easier to say life is denying me that, people are denying me that, my experience is denying me that, because then I don't have to step up. So I get a chance to feel like I would do great things without having to actually ever do anything great. But this would not this one, I must emphasize this again. What makes the Course in Miracles a challenge to teach is this. The Course in Miracles is most of all dealing with unconscious thoughts, feelings, and emotions. And I'm going to say it over and over again. So I don't expect the average person to come to my class to necessarily agree to what the Course is, because the Course isn't talking about our idealized self, which is the way we see ourselves as being in our own mind. It's not even concerned with that level of consciousness. It's talking about, okay, if you really this, if your act is really this much together, then why are you unhappy? Why is your life not working? Why do you have, if you're so together, why are the people around you not really together? So in other words, it's saying, well, why are you so different? You know, why is the way you see yourself, Earl, so different from your reality? Well, it's because you have unconscious guilt, fear, and anxiety, and misperceptions that you don't know about, and it's being out pictured. So in most cases, when I'm talking, I don't even pay that much attention to my own conscious self. You know, so when I listen to people, I always just pretty much, you know, okay. Because I know that the person they think they are, in very few cases, that's just the tip of the iceberg. So when the person says, "Well, I think such and such and such and such a thing," it's like the tip of the iceberg sticking out of the top of the water, saying, "I'm the whole iceberg," and you all know that there's a whole lot more of the iceberg that's under there. That's your reality. So if you really want to know what you think, your environment is what you think. Your mate is what you think. The way you see your children, that is what you think. What you know, it's like it's all around us. What we really think. Now, what we think would be, I'm not mad at anybody. I have no anger toward anybody. I love everybody. Subconsciously, I got rage up to yin yin. That rage gets reflected back to me through I got a child that's going crazy in my perception. I got a mate that sometimes seems like, you know what I'm saying? They're, all of my subconscious rage is being mirrored back to me through my environment. But the average person will say there is no connection between me and my environment. And that's what the Course says, that's the advantage of separation. He says that's why we want to believe in separation. Because we don't want to believe that what we see is in our own mind. Because we get a feeling of feeling good by thinking we're so different from what we don't like. I mean, that's what makes us feel, well, I'm not like that. That's what makes me feel good. But the truth is, you see it, it's in your mind. You see it, do you see anger? How could you recognize it if you didn't have anger thought in your own mind to even know what anger was? You see jealousy? Well, how could you even call it jealousy unless you knew what jealousy was? You would be calling it something else. Oh, he's depressed. Why do you know depression? Because you've had depression, and depression is in your mind. You see what I mean? He's happy. Why do you know happiness? Because you have happy thoughts in your own mind. He's abundant. Oh, you have abundant thoughts. See, whatever we recognize is coming from the interpretation, is coming from within our own mind. So therefore, we could not be seeing something if we don't have a corresponding awareness of that or thought in our own mind. Yes.
So if you're a really loving, peaceful, balanced, calm, happy, really, and I'm sure we've all met people like that, truly, then I guess I always think if you're like that, then you have a greater awareness of, you would see the anger. You might not resonate with it or have a problem with it, but it sounds like you're saying you wouldn't even see that. You would just see love.
That's all you would see.
So it's not like, oh, you're going to become really perceptive to everything that people are and doing and thinking. You're just seeing their God essence.
Yes. Yeah. You in which the Course would say love or call for love. Or love. It's like, that's what used to be mind-blowing about me when I would read the truth. And it would say, well, when you really get to that level of consciousness that you are really love, he says, that's all you will see. And then my mind goes, how in the heck could that be true? You know, how could I ever see? Well, see, that's because I'm going by my experience based on the levels of consciousness that I have had. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? So I'm not really, you know, it's almost like someone saying, well, how could there be a Grand Canyon? I've never seen the Grand Canyon. So how could that exist? Because I don't see how there could be a hole that's a mile deep. Well, that's because your experience hasn't presented that to you, right? Mm-hmm. But the minute you get a Grand Canyon consciousness, right, then you would be at the Grand Canyon and you'd be seeing it. Why? Because I wanted to see the Grand Canyon. So I had to take my mind to that place to have that perception. Mm-hmm. So the Course is basically saying the same thing. That when we allow our perception to be healed by the Holy Spirit, not by us trying to do it on our own, because it says that there are levels of consciousness, I'm sorry, you can't take yourself to. You know, it's like a little kid this tall saying, would you reach up there and hand me a cookie, Mama? I'm sorry, the kid can't reach the cookie. But you could reach the cookie and give it to the kid. And basically, that's what the Course is saying to us. Like, I'm sorry, you've reached a level in your spiritual advancement where you can't reach the cookie by yourself. The kid could study all day. The kid could meditate. The kid could go to little kitty workshops. Right? Just like we do. And when he got through doing all the workshops and the little kid got through doing all the studying, he still come back to the cabinet and he couldn't reach the cookie. He may know why his astral aura was glowing because he can't reach the cookie. You know what I'm saying? He might know what his past was like, which made him not be able. He says that's what we got to realize. There's a certain level on the spiritual path that you can't do it on your own. And by the time you get to something like the Course, you've hit that level. And it says that in the book over and over again. You have actually hit the level. You have to follow instruction now. You have to open your mind up to ways of thinking that you wouldn't ordinarily think. You have to get more honest about yourself than ever before. But I'm going to tell you what. When my mama used to do that when I was real little, it was a heck of a lot easier to have my mama hand me that cookie than for me to try to put a chair, climb on top of the chair, climb on top of the cabinet, maybe fall down and hurt myself. You see what I'm saying? So on the one hand, yeah, the little kid go, I wish I could get the cookie for myself. But on the other hand, it was a lot easier getting the cookie than having the mama hand it to it. You see, this is what the Course is saying. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you don't know how to get the cookie, but wouldn't it be easier to have the cookie handed to you? You want an unconditionally loving life that's really beautiful, and yes, you would love to be able to go out into this world every day and see nothing but love, but you can't give yourself that cookie. Then I'll tell you what you need to do to get the cookie. That's what my mom would say. Well, if you want a cookie, you have to do da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then I go, if I want the cookie bad enough, you know, it's like my friend has a dog. You said, the dog never obeys until he has a cookie. And then she said, lie down. The dog, phew, sit up. You know, because the dog wants the cookie. And that's the condition for getting the cookie. So the Course says the condition for getting the cookie for us is forgiveness, which is the correction of our way of seeing things.
But it's so great because then I've read other books too where they talk about it's not the studying and the learning and going to Machu Picchu or all these things that you have to do and you have to dress and chanting and all this stuff. You allow it, you know, you ask for it, you know, you have the intention and it is revealed to you.
Yes.
You're like, the cookie will come down.
Yeah, you go. Yeah. And it's like, and it's really your real self that's handing you the cookie.
Yeah.
You know, it's like God is nothing but our real self. Our real self. Okay, so let's go a little bit further. Like I said, the Course says many times in the book, go slowly. But what I want to do on Wednesday, a lot of times, is jump around to some really cool stuff. Okay, so we're pretty clear then that there's a payoff. Okay, and then we jump down to the paragraph that says the shift in perception. The next two paragraphs, the reason why I'm jumping over those paragraphs is that they make a lot of sense if you've had a traditional old-fashioned fire and brimstone religious background, fear of God. But otherwise, I can see what it's saying, but it tends to just be a delay and maneuver in classes. So I've done it so long, I tend to try to just skip over the delay and maneuver parts. Like I know the parts that just delay the whole class, that's a part. So I'm going to do the teacher's prerogative and just don't even deal with that today. Okay. But basically it's saying that we see God as outside of us. That the Apostle been taught to see God as outside of us as fierce and powerful and to be defiant. You know, we want to do it our way. You know, it's really funny. People are really proud of the idea of having free will. But once you get to a certain point on the spiritual path, you realize that free will is the worst thing that ever happened to you. Because the Course says at some point, what are you going to use your free will for? Well, you could only use your free will to do just the opposite of whatever the truth is. Because the truth is what is. Love is what is. The universe created us as love and then set everything up for us to have love, right? So if I'm going to use my free will to do something different, that's not to my advantage. And so it's like saying most people use their free will to do just the opposite of the truth, where it's almost like they had no choice but to experience love and but to go for peace and sanity. That would be actually a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But how does he put it? He says, you know, it takes a lot of spiritual growth to get to the point that you realize that you just have the illusion of choice. The choice is just an illusion. Because in the end, you don't have any choice but to deal with what is. You know, you may think you got the choice to deal with something else, but in the end, all you're going to really have to deal with is what is. You know? So, a conscious person is just a person that's trying to get in touch with what is, not how I can make it all different. So, anyway, that's just a little interesting. It says little stuff like that. But it makes sense. So then it talks in this first sentence, in the shift of perception, it tells you how your healing will happen. It says what? Healing must occur in exact proportion to which the valuelessness of the sickness is recognized. So the more I see that there is no value in me suffering in my relationships, suffering financially, suffering physically, suffering emotionally, that's how quickly the healing occurs. Most people try to bring about the healing by trying to fix it. And the Course is saying healing happens as fast as you begin to realize that it's not valuable for you to go through the pain. Which usually brings up people who will say, well, without the pain and the struggle, how do you build strength and character? Because they're kind of thinking of spiritual growth like they're thinking of aerobics. You're right? Like, you know, you build spiritual character the way you build physical muscles, which is a totally untrue comparison. But that's what people do. Well, of course, to build a muscle, it looks like you do. But we're not talking about building muscles. We're talking about letting go of fear, guilt, anger, anxiety, and sickness. And so the Course is saying, if you want to let go of that, then you must realize that the natural law of the universe is harmony. It's peace. It's happiness, right? So I have to stop seeing it as valuable for me to continue to suffer in any way. Okay, now, this is a very important little thing I want to add to that from the Course. If you are in a situation of suffering, and for some reason you have allowed that to be created for you, then you will look at that as a lesson that God would have you learn. That's a very interesting little difference. In other words, if I am suffering, then I need to go, yes, there is a lesson in love that I need to learn in this. But what it's saying is, don't believe you have to suffer to learn the lesson. But if you have created a suffering in some area, then yes, claim that, ask for that to be used as a lesson. Since you're already in it, then allow it to be used to help you. But don't reinforce the idea that you had to have it. In other words, you know, I burned my hand on the stove. I learned a valuable lesson. Don't put your hand on a hot stove. Right? So that made me feel better. Okay, I learned a lesson. Now, did I have to burn my hand to learn not to put my hand on the hot stove? No. So I didn't need to burn my hand in order to get the lesson. So you don't have to suffer in order to have love.
That's a big one, isn't it? Don't a lot of people believe that? I watched Little Miss Sunshine and I saw that movie. It was a really good movie, but it seemed like part of the theme was suffering, or if they had the dreams went to pot, or they had goals, they didn't reach their goals, and that's what makes me me, and the suffering and the struggle, but that's being alive, and just keep going, and it was kind of nice in a way, but like nothing happened, and it was just, I mean, you know.
I always ask people, you know, the ones who go for the suffering like you're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't understand, then. What I always want to ask them, well, what are you complaining about? If you are defending the fact that you need to suffer and that that's how you build strength and having problems makes you stronger, and yet you're complaining to me about the problems, but you just told me that the problems was what you needed. So why are you complaining? You should be in bliss consciousness. The more problems you have, the more you'll be going, oh my God, I got another opportunity to go over here, and I got another opportunity to go over here, and I'm broke, I got an opportunity over here, they told me I got 6 months to live, woo, I got a big opportunity over there, because I need problems to make me grow. You see what I mean? But the average person is not doing that. They're complaining and defending the pain at the exact same time.
And you don't see them saying, and I've grown so strong and powerful and I'm so much better. You don't hear that.
No. And so when you point it out to them, they go, huh? Because in most cases, no one's ever said that to them. You know, it's like, well, because I had a person come up to me after one of the course classes, and they had a lot of resistance to the fact that I was saying you are entitled to miracles. And it's like, what do you mean, just entitled to it, you know, without, you know, doing anything? But I came to find out later that person had been living off an inheritance for a long time. And that they didn't need to work. It was a trust fund baby. So what they were dealing with was their own guilt about receiving what they see other people working so hard to achieve. So I saw that was linked again. See, the same thing. Why were they suffering? Well, somehow or another, this person was trying to assuage their guilt by feeling bad about, making themselves feel bad about having it given to them. And that's how they could handle it. Because I wasn't just the rich person, you know, feeling happy about not having to work every day when I see my friends struggling. But I'm suffering too, because I don't really see how I even deserve to have this. So I'm suffering with you. You see what I mean? So they saw value in suffering. It's the same thing. We all do it in our own way. But if you just dig a little deeper, you'll always see there's some kind of a payoff whenever a person is suffering in their mind and in their heart.
You know how Oprah handles that? She was flying back from that school she set up in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And one of her assistants was sitting next to her and said, doesn't it make you feel terrible to see all that abject poverty and we have so much? And Oprah's cool. Oprah said, well, I don't see how it would help them for me to be in abject poverty.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be okay tonight. I'm gonna sleep in my $200 sheets. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know that they have but within them.
And because she has that wealth, just like you're saying, that's why she was able to build the school. You know, and so that whole idea that somehow or another there's nobility in being poor is another really, I'm sure it's a philosophy that poor people came up with. Most of the people I know who say that are not the rich people. Most of the people who I know I've ever met that was talking about rich, you know, you can't be, it's harder for a rich man to get through an eye of a needle or whatever, you know, and all that whole thing about somehow or another poverty equals spirituality. I've never met a rich person that said poverty equals spirituality. But I met plenty of people who didn't have who said that, because they were trying to make themselves feel good about their condition of poverty, which is, I'm not saying anything's wrong with that. There's a lesson in that. You could go, okay, my appearing to have poverty, I could learn a lesson that God would have me learn out of this. And hopefully I'll learn the lesson that I deserve abundance.
Yeah, God is about abundance.
Yeah, that's what I hope this, yeah, that's what I'm hoping this will teach me, is that, you know what, I've been poor and I've had a lot, I'd rather have a lot.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Yeah, I've had periods in my life where I had very, very little, where I was like, okay, where is it going to come from next week to pay the bill? And then I've had periods where there was so much happening that I was like, it brought up my guilt. It's like the guy, like, oh my God, I don't think I deserve this much. But I'd rather have that problem. Between the two, I'd rather rather have the overcoming the guilt of so much coming in that I don't know what to do with. I've had my chance to try both of them. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. It's like there's no payoff in poverty consciousness. You know, it's unless you use it to teach you that abundance is your natural state, and that's what you really deserve. You know, so it says healing must occur in exact proportion what to which the valuelessness of sickness, and you can substitute anything, the anything that's bringing you a lack of peace, you can substitute that for sickness, is recognized. So he says, one need but say, I love this, there's no gain at all to me in this, and he is healed. But, here's a big but, the big but, to say there's no gain at all to me in this, one first must recognize certain facts. Fact number one. It's obvious that decisions are of the mind, not of the body. So if sickness or thinking you have the problem is but a faulty problem-solving approach, then the sickness or the problem is a decision. And if the sickness or problem is a decision, guess what? It's the mind that made the decision, not the body. So your body didn't decide to get sick. Your mind made the decision to get sick at an unconscious level. And that sick is not just the physical body. The Course describes the body as your perception. It's not just your physical body. He says, like if we think we live inside our body, but if you just expand it a little bit, you could say, I live inside my perception. So your body is your body is this and your perception. Because as far as I know, I'm inside my way of looking at things. And what's a trip about that, do you realize there are people outside of the way you look at things? We don't ever think about it because it looks like you all are included in my perception. But it's hard for me to realize sometimes that actually your perception is what you're inside of. And so you're really not seeing me at all. You're just seeing me inside of your perception. So your perception of this room could be completely different from mine. The way you're feeling right now, the way you're thinking. But I used to have a tendency to just, since I see you, to kind of like assume that you are all seeing what I'm seeing or feeling what I'm feeling. It took me a while to get that. I'm inside of a bubble, and that each one of us is inside of a bubble. And in that bubble, all we see is our own reflection on the walls of the bubble. And we forget that I'm in my bubble, you in your bubble, and if I really like you, I'll see if my bubble can get next to your bubble. And if it's a really good night, we'll do some bubbling, you know what I'm saying? Do a little bubbling around here, you know. But it's two bubbles going down. You know, and what having a common state of mind or a common purpose does is, in a sense, it kind of puts us inside the same bubble because we're using the same way of interpreting. You see what I mean? So that's what the Course says, that a relationship is a joining of minds, because once we join minds, then in a lot of ways we do become inside the same bubble because we got the same basic viewpoint. So in a lot of ways, we are seeing a lot of things very similarly. That's why we're sitting here. We're like right now, we're in the Course in Miracles bubble. And through the Course, we're all connecting on these ideas. It's just so deep. He says the resistance to recognizing this is enormous, right? The people resist the idea that it's their thoughts that's creating their problem. He says, because the existence of the world as you perceive it depends on the body or the outer being the decision maker. So what keeps my world in place, what keeps the average person's world in place, is that they believe that there are things that are happening outside of themselves that they have no control over. So the Course says terms like instincts, reflexes, and the like represent attempts to endow the body with non-mental motivators. In other words, I just couldn't help but I couldn't help myself. See, there's no connection between what my body does and my mind, right? He says, actually, such terms as instincts and reflexes, they just state or describe the problem. They don't answer it. So this next paragraph, now you can forget everything I've said, and you can start with this next paragraph, and it would just say the same thing in a different way. That's what I like about the Course. You never have to go back. Just keep on. You never have to go back with the Course when you're reading it. Because all it's saying is the same thing, but it goes, did you get it this way? No. Nope. Well, let me say the same thing this way. No. Nope. Well, let me say the same thing that way. No. Nope. Well, let me say the same thing. So you never have to go back because you're going to hear the same thing 1,000 times. So here we go. The acceptance of sickness as a decision of the mind for a purpose for which it would use the body is the basis of healing. Okay. And this is so for healing in all its forms. So what's the basis for healing? Accepting that the way I'm seeing things that's making me unhappy or sick right now is what? A decision of the mind. That's the basis of healing. It's to understand that this is a decision of my mind. What I'm going through right now is a decision of my mind. Then it says, a patient decides this is so, and what? He recovers. If the person decides against recovery, what happens? He won't be healed. So I give you the pill, you feel better. Right? I give somebody else the pill, they say, guess what? I don't feel better. What does that mean? They both on the same aspirin. What's the difference? One person decided to be healed, the other person didn't. A disease that there's no cure for, in a sense, means that, you know, the jury's still out on that. So actually, that means that you could be cured. If what? You decide. But would that be happening on the conscious level or unconscious level? Mostly on the unconscious level. Most decisions are made on the unconscious level. We think they're made on the course is teaching us to make decisions on the conscious level. The truth is saying that really until you get into the truth, you're always making decisions on an unconscious level. Nobody says I decided to be with an abusive person on the conscious level. But they probably overlooked all the signs. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's not that that person just changed overnight. Probably what happened was you were not really conscious enough to really check out the signs.
Now you're still valuing the suffering.
Say what?
You're still valuing the suffering.
Yeah, I'm still valuing the suffering. That's why people can't get away from these people. They say, well, why don't they just leave? Well, unconsciously, they see some value in that. If I feel like I'm not worthwhile, right? If I feel like I have no value, why would I leave somebody that's treating me the way I believe about myself? They're actually witnessing to what I believe about myself. I won't leave until I don't believe that about myself anymore. That's when I leave. But as long as I believe that about myself, I'm going to stay with the abuser. While saying I don't want to be with the abuser. But actually, the abuser is the one that's being the most honest with me. Because I'm no good, and they treat me like I'm no good. The person who treats me like I'm valuable when I think I'm no good, that's the person I'm afraid of, and I think that's deceiving me, and I think that's the liar. That's why it's almost like the once you become more conscious, you can't really form a special relationship with the person who thinks opposite to you because they don't ever trust you. If I met a woman who really, really, really didn't love herself and I decided I wanted to have a relationship with her, so I treated her with respect and with value, she would probably not want to be in a relationship with me. She would sabotage it, or she would say, why can't we just be friends? That's the key word. You're too sane. Why can't we just be friends? I give myself completely to the psychos. And if you get crazy enough, you might be able to bubble with yourself. You know what I'm saying? You might grab some bubbles around it. We're so crazy. I love us. I love us. We're so out there. But then you see the truth of what I'm saying. We probably all experienced that. With a really nice person became the friend, and then the person who was the one that wasn't,
yeah,
giving us a million problems, we had the passion for. It's amazing to watch that. Passion is for the insane. Friendship is for the sane. And if you really want passion, you go, well, just see me as crazy. I won't be so nice. It's wild.
Earl, does this hook up with a few months ago you talked about too many of us believe that we need to pay for our pleasure or success with punishment?
Exactly. Yeah, the Course says we pay for our pleasure, pay, P-A-Y, that we pay for our pleasures with coins of suffering. You see what I mean? It's like I had, I had a good time at the party. I danced on the table with a lampshade on my head, and I pulled my top off. Okay. The next morning, I got to pay for that through a hangover and guilt. See, I had a pleasure, but I had to pay for it with pain. I had a real good day today, and then I smashed my car up against a hydrant accidentally when I was backing out. See, I had to. We've all seen it. Up, feeling really good, or down right behind it. I'm feeling a lot of pleasure over here. Had a great time on my vacation. Come back, and my house need repairing. You know, it's like the course is in on a subconscious level. We think we have to balance it out. Every pleasure with the pain. That's why when a person suffers a long time, they're more willing to accept a gift. Because a part of them feels like, well, I've suffered so much, I deserve to have somebody treat me good. So without the suffering, they wouldn't accept the gift.
But they say, it won't last.
Yeah, or it won't last.
Like,
right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So the challenge is to keep accepting your good and to accept that it's okay for you to have good, even if you haven't suffered. That's the challenge. That's the spiritual growth. To go that you deserve, you're entitled to love just because of who you are. Just because you're here. You know. And so it says here, I'm going to go through this paragraph. So it says, who's the physician? Only the man or the patient himself. The outcome is going to be what? What we decide that it is. Special agents seem to be ministering to the person, yet the special agents but give form to that person's own choice. So I decide to be healed, then the miraculous cure shows up. I decide to be wealthy, then I win the lottery. I decide to be wealthy, then I get the raise on my job. I decide to be wealthy, then the workshop shows up. You see what I'm saying? Whatever we do, I decide to lose weight, then the aerobics class comes. You know what I'm saying? It's like whatever you want to do, he says the decision comes first. And then he says the special agents or the things that we do in the world or the medicine or the trip or the school or whatever we do, he says that's just there to give a tangible form to your desire. That's what they do. He says nothing else. But the decision had to come first, right? He says they are not actually needed at all. Like, I didn't really need to have the aspirin to get rid of the headache. But I did take the aspirin as a symbol of the fact that I'm willing to be through with the headache. So he says at some levels you do that. You do what he calls symbol or special agents. You know, I want my body to be healed. Now I may go get the operation. But the operation is just bringing tangible form to my desire. I have to first decide I deserve love. Then all the ways for love to come to me will start presenting itself. But the person who hasn't made the decision, then no matter what you give them, it's not going to work. And that's what most people do. They want the stuff to come, but they really haven't made a decision to be happy yet. They think the stuff is going to come, then I'll make the decision to be happy. You know, the ice cream cone showed up. Now I'm happy about the ice cream cone. See, in the truth, a person in the truth knows it's just the opposite. First, I decide to be happy having a nice ice cream cone. Then the ice cream cone shows up. See, it's the other way around. Because I decided. So he says, the patient can merely rise up without their aid and say what? I have no use for this. There is no form of sickness that would not be cured at once, at the point that you really got, I have no more use for this. We've done that in different areas of our lives. We've been in relationships and different things where we've gone, you know what? I don't have no use for this anymore. I've had it. And then the minute you do that, it's over. You know, okay, I've had it with you. I've done everything I can do. I've tried every way that I can. I have no more use for this. And he says, you're cured. Of course you're cured, because now you're going to leave a situation that's making you sick. But you had to make the decision first. So the next part of this, and I'll complete that next week, but the next part of this continues the last two steps of the cure of any situation. So, you could also read that on your own when you get a chance. But this section is an incredible section. And then the section after that, I'm going to go through that one too, so you can read that too. That's called the function of the teacher of God. In other words, okay, you're getting ready to go out in the world. What is your function? Like, how do you deal with the truth with your regular people that you are with in your day-to-day reality? And that's what the next section is. Like, how do you deal with the people who don't believe what we believe? That's what the next section covers.
And awesome.
That's why I'm going slow, because these are like two key sections. There are some sections of the course that a person could just work on those sections and don't even care if they read the rest of the book. It would transform their life. If you could just get two sections down.
If I could just get this one down,
you know it would be incredible. Your whole life would change. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's funny too, because like that last part that you just read, I'm thinking about Lourdes and all the miracles. You're like, oh, it was a miracle. It's like, yeah. Like, of course, it was right mindedness, and it happened like that.
Right mindedness. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a miracle. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's funny, because the Course in Miracles definition of a miracle is right mindedness. It says if we have right mindedness, it's a miracle.
Well, the situation, you know, I don't know what to make of it. Where you feel like you've made that decision, like, I'm not gonna, you know, repeat what I did. Mm-hmm. Or I have no use for that. Mm-hmm. And it seems to come up again and again, and you're like, okay.
And then you keep making the decision. That's a very. I'm so glad that you're saying that, because that's what you do. I always use the analogy of, do you breathe once for the whole day? We breathe moment to moment to stay alive. We can't use the breath we used 5 minutes ago. So I have to make the decision for peace all day long.
Darn.
Yeah. Now, but here's the cool part. This is the cool part. Just like anything else, if you do it enough, your mind becomes programmed, and your mind will start making the decision for peace for you without you having to consciously stop to do it. So you just at that phase, and I'm at that phase where we're reprogramming ourselves. And so that's why we have to do it moment to moment to moment. But you won't have to do that always. You'll get to a point, and he talks about that, where your mind will automatically start correcting itself as soon as something comes up. So this is just a stage that you're going through. Thank you for sharing, Holy Spirit.
Sit with your issues maybe for 3 minutes instead of 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
As the thing progresses, I've noticed.
Say it again.
Like, I started noticing that maybe when I have an issue, because I was having an issue when I was walking over here, my ego was, and it was, it lasted only like 3 minutes instead of something I would have.
There you go. Yeah, you see the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And all of us are doing better than we used to, but we don't think about it sometimes. And we kind of hard on ourselves. But I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, something that you would have, like a relationship you would have been in for 6 months, now you'd be in it a month. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's really a sign that you're loving yourself more. And some people think it's a sign that means they're not that good at relationships, even worse. Because now my relationships don't seem to last 3 months. Well, they used to last 3 years, but in a lot of cases that was 3 years of dissatisfaction. So what you're telling me now is you can't stay in things that bring you pain as long as you used to. That's an improvement.
Well, it's more like my mind can't be the bringer of my pain anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's not necessarily from the outside that I'm learning it. I'm learning like my own, like where I don't trust on my own, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like I had this desire to get a job, and I sent out 100 resumes, and I get like 3 phone calls, and then, you know, the universe was trying to tell me, you're real good at being self-employed, you have been for 6 years, and I didn't really hear it, and
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to
mm-hmm.
hear it, because I was like, I can't survive like that, I don't deserve to survive like that. And so now, instead of going through the struggle of like, well, in 3 months I can do it, or I can save up to do it, now I'm just, it's kind of like God is seriously just holding my hand and taking me through the museum of my thoughts, and it's just kind of like, okay, you're going to be self-employed, and here's your business plan. So it's like,
yeah,
I'm really getting a...
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You're establishing a communication with your higher, with God, mm-hmm. your higher self. That's the, to me, that's the prize. You know?
It's awesome.
Yeah, that to me, guidance is the prize. I see so many people working for everything but guidance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do I get in touch with my guidance from God? How do I learn how to hear God's voice? To be anybody who has any kind of sanity, that should be their number one goal, is how do I get in touch with the infinite intelligence of the universe? How did I get in touch with divine mind? How do I get in touch with the consciousness that's greater than my own ego? You know, because I need direction. And that's what you're doing. That's what the Course teaches us how to do. How to listen to the other voice.
Yesterday, a thought came to me that I was to go to the Course because I didn't know what to do about something related to healing, because I had made the choice for healing. So I woke up really early this morning and went downstairs and opened the Course and said, Holy Spirit, please lead me to what I am to know. And it was the very section you covered today. And when I read it this morning, I was filled with so much joy, because for me, knowing that I'm the one responsible and that I can make new decisions gives me a freedom to choose.
Mm-hmm.
That is so different than the conditioning of somehow it is the body, or it is this, or it is that, that it is something outside of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to know, and just thank you for being such a beautiful teacher of God mm-hmm. in my life.
All right, and I'm not going to be the one getting the test today. You know what I'm saying? Because I mean, that's that. Thank you. That means that makes everything I do worthwhile to me. Really.
Every time I come really. To class, you know, no matter what class it is, I receive something mm-hmm. that makes my life different. I begin to wake up a little bit, perceive differently. You know, whether it's you need to do nothing, but. This came out of that too,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I can solve this, God. I don't need to do anything. But Holy Spirit, you show me what I'm to know.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm pretty sure today was just for me. It just spoke to me.
Me too.
I thought it was for me.
May I share something that happened to me last week?
Yeah.
I was sitting in a coffee shop waiting for a friend of mine to show up, and this man came in and he started ordering his coffee order. And after him, a woman came in, and she was kind of standing next to him, and she kept saying, "You're not looking at me, you're not looking at me." And I thought, oh, they're in a relationship, and something's going really bad mm-hmm. over there. But I was kind of listening. And it started to get really heated, and he started to call her crazy, and she said, "You blew through the stop sign, and my kids are in the car," and they got into the fight right there in front of all of us, you know, pew areas, and then she walked out. He was calling her crazy as she walked out. So they didn't even know each other. You know, from my first impression, was they're in a relationship, and mm-hmm. they're having issues, but then they didn't even know each other, so she leaves. And I recognized, like 2 months ago, I wouldn't have understood what was going on there. And I understood that was my anger. There were many times that I have been driving around the city when I felt incredibly angry, wanted to follow somebody to wherever they went to tell them off for what they had just done to me,
mm-hmm.
just like that woman did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me it was like no coincidence it was a woman who went in after this guy, and he's calling her crazy, and she just wants to be recognized for what just happened to her. And it goes along with what Judith was saying, how 2 months ago I wouldn't have recognized what that
mm-hmm,
was.
Mm-hmm.
And now I understand that was my own anger. Even though I was perfectly calm that day, I hadn't had any issues with driving,
mm-hmm.
felt fine, there was something in me that understood what that little play was right in front of me.
And see, mm-hmm. it was great to get the lesson through someone else's experience.
Yeah, I didn't have to do it!
Yeah. So she really was. This was just funny because she really was crazy.
Yeah.
And he was crazy too.
Yeah.
They were both cause for love because, like you said, she was saying she has a child, right?
Yeah.
And so she didn't know who he was. and something could have come out of that that was really, really bad, and then her child wouldn't have even had a mother. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So even though I could understand that she had, because the anger took her, like the course said, the anger took her into insanity. Because that's what anger is. It's a form of insanity, even though we feel it, and we shouldn't pretend we don't feel it when we feel it. But it really, but there was a safer way to handle that.
Right. So that just means
yeah.
that they acted out a little play.
Yeah, they acted out. Yeah.
Smiling because I recognized
yeah.
what it was.
Yeah.
And then the week before that, though, I had a whole week where strangers kept saying, "I trust you," to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I went into this gas station where you have to pay first before you pump, and I said, "Oh, how much do I have to write the check for?" Whatever. And the guy looked at me and said, "I trust you. You know, like you can go out and."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was the week before. Last week was anger, and I saw a lot of anger disrupting, and it all had to do with driving.
And that's
she
so
was
great.
The only one.
That's
that was
so
the only
great.
Scene that was played out in front
yeah.
of me.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, but 2 months ago, Earl, I wouldn't have recognized that. So in 2 months, something, my consciousness has already started to change.
Yes. Yes, acknowledge that. That's, I'm so glad you see that. Thank you. Tomorrow,
thank you.
Mutual. But tomorrow night at 7 is the next adventure, and then Sunday at 1 o'clock. And have a great time in the lab, you all. I appreciate you so much. Mm-hmm.